Bummer, the holidays are over. No more presents. But yay, you have your freedom again. The new year is full of ups and downs, but however you're feeling, you can always be happy with Prime Video. Catch the new season of Reacher. Rent or buy new releases like Taylor Swift, The Eras Tour Extended Version. You can add on hundreds of streamers. One app, one password. Prime Video, find your happy place. Restrictions apply. Prime membership not required to rent or buy. See Amazon.com/Amazon Prime for details.
And welcome back to Success Made the Last. I'm Rick Tilkenny. This is our Legends show. And our very special guest today is Regina Herzlinger. And she is the godmother of consumer-driven healthcare. And she's going to share some surprising secrets of her success today. We are celebrating her for lots of reasons. But I think first and foremost, is to sum this thing up to say congratulations to Regina for her lifetime of accomplishments and how she's living her life in the leadership position that she's accomplished. And Regina, it's an honor to honor you today, given that we think you are a person who's moved from success to significance.
It's an honor to be honored, especially by you. Thank you so much.
You bet. You've got such a beautiful career to describe to everybody, and we often read bios that go on and on. I would love to hear it from you in terms of the story of Regina and where were you born and what were some of the key milestone points along the way to where you are today at Harvard in your illustrious position.
So I was born in what was then Palestine, is now Israel. I was born in the middle of the war, and I heard silences, gunshots, airplanes flew overhead. The Mediterranean houses are coated with stucco, and as a small girl, I watched a bullet create a furrow down the stucco, and I had no fear at all. So I don't know if that's stupid or it's a characteristic that helped me all my life. I was very interested in the furrow. I was interested in how it moved and what direction it took. So when you survive a war like that, there are not a lot of things that scare you. The Israelis were vastly outgunned and out person. There were women in the armies, though they weren't outmanned. But somehow they still prevailed, for better or worse, they prevailed. And I liked it. It was a lot of fun to run underground, to try to escape the bullets. It was like a game to me. I think it made me very brave. Also made me willing to take risks than other people who led easier childhoods might not take. And so when I thought about my career, I thought very big, and I thought I am in my late 70s, and women of my age are typically the first in doing what they've done. And I was very interested in being an academic. I like to read. I like to write. I love my students. I like virtually everything about academia. And there were no women professors, certainly not at the school that I wanted to teach in, which was the Harvard Business School. But I was sure I was going to be the first tenured woman professor there. And I owe that, I believe, to this childhood that I led, not a childhood I recommend, but I think that the Ukrainians that are going through something like this now, there will be people like me who are courageous and foolhardy. So I wound up being the first woman to be tenured at Harvard Business School. I wound up the first woman to be chaired, which is a big honor. I was the first woman on 15 or so large corporate boards. And with my husband, I went to MIT. My husband also went to MIT. He became a MIT PhD physicist. I became somebody who got straight C's in her physics courses, but we got along and we started three companies together, two of which are successful firms in two ways. They were financially successful, but more importantly, my husband invented medical devices that have saved the lives of hundreds of thousands of people. Our last device is a device that in 2 to 5 minutes can replace all the blood of people who are bleeding to death. And we've just donated 30 of those of our big, their pumps, they're called the rapid infusers, to the Ukrainians, to be used for Russian or Ukrainian soldiers, to be used humanitarianly, and hundreds of smaller ones to the military that can't pump the blood as fast but can stabilize a soldier who might otherwise die. So I like my career. Along the way, I've written 6 books. One of them was called Market-Driven Healthcare. It was a bestseller in its field, and it raised holy hell because it said the consumer should have a much greater voice in healthcare because they pay for it and they don't know anything about it. It's a very obscure, untransparent field. And the consumer is derided. For one thing, you and I are called patients, which means you be patient. Your time's worthless. And secondly, typically consumers are described as illiterate and stupid because they don't know how an MRI works or what an out-of-pocket maximum is. It's a ridiculous test of people's intelligence. So I wrote this book and a number of others about why the consumers should have a greater voice, how to make that happen. And a number of the innovations I suggested 40 years ago, which raised holy hell, or maybe 30 years ago, have now become a reality, like telemedicine, sensors, direct-to-consumer marketing. Now, I have to tell you, I have 2 children, and my daughter is a physician. My husband's a great scientist. I have the greatest respect for the technology in healthcare, which is extraordinary. And really, during COVID, came to fruition and saved so many lives. But the structure of the sector, just as a sector, it's inefficient, it's inaccessible, and it causes too much grief for too many people who need to use it. So I think those are all pretty good.
Yeah. That is.
There are people who have done much more, but I'm happy with what I've done.
Of course, they've done much more, but how about you and those accomplishments, along with your husband and what you've done in the field are remarkable. And I want to unpack part of that, because I think inside there, maybe there's this theme of seeing that bullet hole and building this fearlessness. And so you became very clear on what you wanted to do. And I want you to describe to our listeners, especially those that wish to be mentored, about how do you let that kind of drive help you make decisions along the way and to be crystal clear about some pathway.
Oh, bummer. The holidays are over. But yay, your weird relatives left. But no more presents. But yay, you have your freedom again. But there are no more desserts. But there's also no more holiday music, huh? The new year is full of ups and downs. But however you're feeling, you can always be happy with all the content on Prime Video. Catch the new season of Reacher, included with Prime.
Why'd you hit him so hard?
I don't hit soft.
Rent or buy new releases, like The Hunger Games, The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes. You can even add on hundreds of streamers, all in one app with one password. No bummers here, just lots of yay. Prime Video, find your happy place. Restrictions apply. Prime membership not required to rent or buy. See Amazon.com/Amazon Prime for details.
Yeah, so I think it's very important to think big. So in my vast corporate experience, I've seen really extraordinary people limit themselves to thinking, well, I can be the CFO of this company, or I can be whatever it is in whatever organization they're with, when there's so many other things they could do with their intellect and their personality. So when you think about yourself, think big. I certainly thought big. I thought I could do what people said was just, at that time, was just not possible. And you have to be strategic about how you're going to accomplish it. It's not going to happen. So you need a mentor for sure. You need more than one mentor. You need a lot of mentors. You also need to understand yourself and what you're good at and what you're not good at when you select those mentors. I am a big believer that mentorship is not sufficient, that whatever you do, mentors are human beings and they can be political and pushed in many different ways that may have little to do with you, but have a lot to do with corporate strategy. It's very important that you have a kind of job where your skill can be measured. So you, Rick, your viewership, I'm sure, is a metric of yes. Your great success. My success at the Harvard Business School, which is a teaching school, was measured by my students. Student ratings are taken very seriously there. They're published, they're competitive. I took them seriously. When my husband and I ran our businesses, we were very, very serious. This sounds fatuous, but it's often neglected about our customers and how they did and how usable our devices were and how many patients we saved. We kept track of that. That was very important to us. So success and movement towards success cannot just be with mentors alone. Also has to be with metrics of whatever it is that you're trying to accomplish. So another thing is to keep thinking. So in my own career, things that interested me in my 20s and 30s were not as interesting as I got older, and I switched what I did. And right now, in my late 70s, I have a number of patents for a new device that I've invented, and I'm writing a new book on how to innovate healthcare. Not you should, not you could, not you would. That's all very important. But shoulda, coulda, woulda, if you don't know how to make it happen, it's not going to happen. So my point is to keep thinking. And for women especially, the word no is big. I was told when I was first appointed as an assistant professor that I could be an assistant professor, but I couldn't teach because women can't teach. And I owed work to my wonderful mentor. I did my work and I left. I thought it was hopeless. And the lesson that I've learned, the dean came back to me 6 months later and he said, well, we changed our mind. You can teach. And I think I should have put up a fuss. I should have said, you don't understand how good my teaching will be for you. Mm-hmm. Not for me, for you. That you need to have women teaching, that times are changing. There are women in the classroom. There were only 5% at the time. So one thing I've taken out of this experience is no just means you really don't understand how what I'm proposing is going to be really great for you. So those are some lessons that I've learned along my career. I hope they answer some of your very good question.
Thank you, Regina. We are talking today with a legendary leader, Regina Herzlinger, and she is Harvard's first female business school. We are so pleased to have you on. We're going to be right back after this quick commercial and continue this marvelous conversation.
Hello, I'm Heather Barnes, food and product photographer and storyteller behind the lens. Our Austin-based team is all about visual solutions. For your brand, it's essential for your product to be memorable and have stickiness. Our clients like Ghirardelli, Tiff's Treats, and Nautamu choose our photography to develop positive associations with their brand. They call our work inspiring because it moves consumers into a relationship with their company. And we can do the same for you. Learn more today at heatherbarnes.com. Focused on you, your story, and your success with memorable photography garnished with love.
Okay, so we are now back with Regina Herzlinger. And I want to tell you, Regina, that in 1978... I was at Procter & Gamble working on why women should be in sales. It's like, what? And here we are in 2023 talking about some of the same topics. And I'm sitting here going, I'm not believing this. This is, 45 years later from when I was in this seminar. And there's a couple of things that you said in the front end of the show, and I want you to explain to people about the journey and how you're actually doing this. And I can't believe I'm saying this, but breaking the glass ceiling in 2023. And one of them that struck me is that you said you got to kind of tell it like it is. Your path cannot be conventional. And the other part that I read about, she says, don't be a mother. It's like,
yeah.
I wish I would have known this 45 years ago, but what a brilliant observation. Tell us more about that.
So all too often women assume, wonderful, smart, tremendous women assume maternal roles. And rather than being substantive and assertive and well spoken and knowledgeable as they are, they talk about, are you well mentored? Have we set things up so you can succeed? And the conversation is motherly. And rather than being professional, by which I mean sticking to the subject at hand, being very smart about what's going on, talking clearly about the issue at hand. If you're wrong, just shut up and say, I'm wrong. You've got the right point. And don't be a mother. That doesn't mean you have to be a tough guy. You can smile, you can be feminine, but don't be a mother. Your role in as a professional person is to help the aims of that organization get accomplished, and you can best do that by being a professional. One other thing that is very important is to understand money, understand how you make money, understand how you lose money, understand how to read financial statements so you could figure out if things are going well or not going well. That's not an indication that you're a bad person because you know a lot about money. It's an indication that you're a real professional. But money isn't everything. In my own career, I don't do any consulting. It's very lucrative for business school professors, especially at Harvard, especially in the field I'm in. I don't like it. I don't enjoy it. I'm very entrepreneurial. I'm very independent. Money isn't everything. I don't even give it a second thought. I'm always smiling. I always suggest other ways of doing things, but I would never do it. So when you think about your own career.
Finding a therapist who accepts your insurance can be hard. That's why Alma is making it easier to find someone in network. They help therapists accept insurance so that more people can access affordable mental health care. In fact, people who use their insurance for sessions through Alma save an average of 77% on the cost of therapy. When you browse their online directory, you'll see thousands of mental health care professionals who offer both virtual and in-person sessions. Just select your insurance plan to filter by coverage, then use other qualities like specialty and area of concern to narrow down your search. And if you're not sure what your plan covers, Alma can help with that too. Their free cost estimator tool makes it easy to understand your benefits and see what sessions will cost before you schedule your first appointment. Book a free consultation with a therapist today at helloalma.com/therapy60. That's helloalma.com/therapy60.
Oh, bummer. The holidays are over. But yay, your weird relatives left. But no more presents. But yay, you have your freedom again. But there are no more desserts. But there's also no more holiday music, huh? The new year is full of ups and downs. But however you're feeling, you can always be happy with all the content on Prime Video. Catch the new season of Reacher, included with Prime.
Why'd you hit him so hard?
I don't hit soft.
Rent or buy new releases like The Hunger Games, The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes. You can even add on hundreds of streamers, all in one app with one password. No bummers here, just lots of yay. Prime Video, find your happy place. Restrictions apply. Prime membership not required to rent or buy. See amazon.com/AmazonPrime for details.
You should know money. You should know how to make money. You should know how to make yourself and your organization secure, and you should be really good at it. But it's not everything.
No, it is not. One of the things that we read about you was about your parents. Our very dearest friends in Los Angeles, Ken and Rosalie Asarge. Rosalie had a dad who seven times came to that crossroads at the concentration camp And seven times
in a row, my goodness.
He went left versus right and survived it. Seven times. And I think about your parents, and I want to know, I want you to tell our listeners about how your parents shaped your dogged determination.
Oh, my mother and father left Germany in 1939, and the only member of their vast family who survived was my mother's brother, my uncle, who was a playboy, and I think the rest of the family was glad to get rid of him. But the rest of them stayed in Germany. They believed in the goodness of humanity. And of course, they're all dead. My parents were very determined to survive and to lead as good a life as they could lead, given this grievous loss of their wonderful family, their well-being, their ability to work. My father started a new business in New York City when he was in his late 60s. And my mother was a card shark. My mother loved to play cards, and she was kind of plump, and as they say in Yiddish, zaftik, she was a well-built woman. She liked to laugh a lot. People thought she was just a mark. She was a terrific card shark. So they made the best of the hand that they were dealt. And I think that's a very valuable lesson, and that is forget about it. Move on in your life. So, they're bad people, and they do horrible things. We see it every day. You just do the best you can in your own life.
Thank you for that. Okay, there's a couple of bigger things showing up here, and I'm glad you just touched on your funny mom, because I wanted to know who else in your life has influenced your own sense of humor, because I can tell that you have one and that you're also a great storyteller. So who are all some of those people you'd like to thank for your storytelling ability and for your brilliant sense of humor?
So being funny is helpful. My first teaching job was teaching accounting. And if you're not funny and teach accounting, boy, you're in trouble. So,
that's right.
I think my mother was a great storyteller. Since the entire family was dead, she sought to enliven them. For me, I was an only child, and I heard a lot about Jewish life in what was then Germany and is now part of Lithuania. My father, Bauer, he was a very dour scholar. My father was a rabbi, although he was a businessman. And rabbis in those days were scholars. And I come from the whole line were scholars. The women in his family supported the men who were biblical scholars. And he was scholarly. He was a really smart man. I enjoyed being with him. And I would play cards with them every night. We played gin rummy. We played with two decks. So that's quite a feat of memory. I always won. And it only lately occurred to me that the card shark and the scholar let me win. There was no way that I could have won otherwise. So I think very important, those two are very important in my lives. In my life, my uncle Mocha was a very funny man, and he laughed a lot. I think that was very important. And my very best friend, most important person in my life, is my husband, George. So he is very brilliant. He's not particularly funny, but he likes to have fun. He's the kindest person I've ever met. We have people in our firm who've worked for us for 40 years. We recently had lunch with somebody who worked for George when we first started our company, literally in our garage. And this man was a cooperative student from Northeastern University, a great university here in Texas. And he told George he'd run out of money. And we were supporting our family and this company. We weren't particularly wealthy. But George said, "You stay with us as long as you need to stay with us." So he moved away. He did very well. He has a wonderful position at Intel, great programmer. And he just came back to Boston from the West Coast to tell my husband that he has a son, and the son is named George. So that's my husband's name, George. So that's George. He's an extraordinarily kind human being. He could have been a great theoretical physicist when we were at MIT. The theory of physics was very, very important, and he could have done that. But instead, he got fascinated in using his skills to build pumps that keep people alive. And he was a great dad for our daughter, the doctor, and our son. Both our children went to Harvard. Our son went to Harvard through ROTC, Reserve Officers Training Corps. Not my idea, not Mom's idea. One war was enough for me. But he felt that he was privileged and he had to give back. And my son served in the infantry, which is the fighting part of the army. And he was a captain in the Iraq War. And I said to him, "Why don't you wait to enlist in a war that you think is a war we need to be in?" And he said, "We cannot have a military composed of people who make those kinds of decisions. We need a military that is willing to serve this country, rightly or wrongly." He didn't say it as pompously as I just said it, but he did say that. And I wrote an editorial about him in the journal. It was called My Ivy League Soldier. So my son, to be in ROTC, he had to go to MIT because Harvard didn't have ROTC then. And he had his courses and he played football. He was a busy boy. And my point was that there are too few people, without making him out to be an angel, because he's a normal guy, but there are too few people who are willing to do their share to keep our country alive. I don't mean the military. You want to go to help women who have premature births, disproportionately African-American women. Great idea. There's so many needs. There's so many good things that people could do, but they need to do them, and they need to give back to this great nation that we're all part of. So those are the people. I can't say other than my mom. They were great storytellers, but they were very influential role models in my life.
Thank you. We're going to wrap up today's wonderful conversation, and I've got a couple of other philosophical questions for you, and they're all kind of around speed. And here at our station, we talk about TR, not Teddy Roosevelt, but Tom Remain. And we talk about epiphanies lately. We, of course, talk about success to significance. And I need to ask you, is it possible that we can speed up epiphanies with our remaining time?
I'm not following you. You look so serious, and I feel terrible.
Don't worry about it. We're okay. I'll back it up a second. If individuals of our age have lost their ability to be lifelong learners and lost their ability to take risk, and they no longer are dreamers. And because of that lack of activity or behavior, you can't get to being significant because you stop dreaming and thinking. So in part of this whole idea is, how can people get back to having epiphanies and good ideas? And is there speed associated with it, given that we're not going to be around forever?
A terrific question, and I have observed it among my peers and people who are older than me. And, you know, there are so many 100-year-olds, you know, we never would have predicted that. But they somehow stopped artificially at 65. These very talented people, doctors, scientists, social workers, people who could do so much good, and they're very focused on their day-to-day life, on their food, their transportation. These are important. You make your life as comfortable as possible, but it can't be everything in your life. And they have lost that sense of mission that propelled them through most of their lives. I'm baffled by it. So I like your question. It's a question I've asked myself over and over again. People say to me, when are you going to retire? What they're saying is, you're so damn old. When are you going to retire? And I say, when I stop doing a good job, I'm going to retire. And I'm going to do something else. So my main occupation now is teaching and writing. So when my students say, let the old lady retire, I'll retire. When the books don't sell or don't have nasty comments about the offensive ideas in them, I'll retire. But I want to do something else. I'm not interested in worrying about what I'm going to have for dinner. I don't mean I'm some sort of angel, but I just can't see that. I think the minute that happens to you, so we're on a podcast, we're not live, but imagine somebody with scoliosis people get bent over, their whole body shape changes, the way they move and think about interacting with others changes. I don't know. Your program should help. Should help a lot. We're missing an incredible amount of potentially valuable resources.
We sure are. And you have commented for the last 35 minutes or so on significance with almost everything you've said. But there's a choice that people can make about being significant. And I just want you to finish the show by giving a comment on why you and your husband have chosen to be significant and giving away these wonderful pumps that happen to replace the human blood in the body in two to five minutes, because it's going to come down to people. You got a chance to either be successful or significant. Why'd you make that choice?
Well, I'm the last of the lot, so it's clear I have to do something good. My whole line, from my father's side, they were biblical scholars. They were Orthodox Jews. I can't do that under Orthodox Jewry. My husband has a similar family history. My husband's history is his father, his grandfather, emigrated from Austria, and he was an illegal immigrant. Illegal immigrant. So he was on a boat. He was shoveling coal to earn his keep, and the boat landed in Newark, and his grandfather walked off the boat and settled down in Newark. George's father, the grandfather, was a leather tanner, which means he removed the hairs from the skin of an animal. Terrible profession. And George's father did that as well. But at night, he went to school, and he went through and got a degree from New York University. And he became a CPA. He started a very successful practice, not only because he was a good accountant, but because he was, like his son, such an honest, kind human being. And he had four brothers and sisters, and he supported them until they grew up. So I think just by sheer chance, the chance of my meaning of physicist at MIT is a number equivalent to zero, because I didn't know what the hell those people were talking about. But I did meet a physicist, was lucky enough to marry him, and we have very similar, I think, backgrounds, which we were very lucky, made our marriage a good marriage.
Regina, thank you so much for being on our Legend Show today. You are a walking, talking, sign, symbol, person, saint on this earth, along with your family, showing people how to be significant. And for that, we thank you.
Thank you. I'd give you a hug, but fortunately, I can't. So, thank you. Likewise. So much.
Likewise. Thank
you. Bye-bye, Rick.
Bye-bye. That was Regina Herzlinger. And as we always say here, we wish you all a successful life on your way to significance. Have a great day.
Space, the great cosmic expanse, where man meets galaxy. And until now, the only way to see it was decades of intense astronaut training. But now, it's your chance to explore the edge of space with a lucky scratch. The Texas Lottery is giving you the chance to explore the stratosphere. Play $1 million cash blast scratch tickets and enter for a chance to win a luxury trip to the edge of space. Must be 18 or older. Play responsibly.